My name is James Perloff, Perloff. I've been a journalist since 1985 when I started writing for the New American Magazine. And I guess you could say that I've been red-pilled since 1978 when I read Gary Allen's book, None Dare Call a Conspiracy. I've written a few books over the years, such as Tornado in a Junkyard, The Case Against Darwin. I've written a primer on the New World Order called Truth is a Lonely Warrior, which came out in 2013, and that was supplemented by a book last year called 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw. And I was working on a book on 9/11, but got diverted by the urgency of this COVID crisis, which is really, they're using it as a pretext to bring on the New World Order very, very fast. So I do have a brand new book out. It's called COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come Red-Pilled.
Okay, so what is it you think so urgent to write about COVID-19 for?
Well, there's all kinds of threats. I divided the book into five parts. The first part's on the impact of the lockdowns, which is obviously there's an enormous economic effect. There's a tremendous downside for people's health and obviously destruction of civil liberties. And in that section, I also quote medical experts and scholars from around the world and why the lockdowns were not necessary. And I also have a separate chapter just on masks and social distancing.
Well, hang on, the lockdowns, it would be argued the lockdowns had to happen. And if they hadn't happened, we would be looking at much, much greater numbers of people having died.
Well, not at all. You're there in the UK, I'm here in America, but Neil Ferguson's Imperial College model has been exposed as grossly overestimating the number of deaths. He was using outdated codes that were based on influenza, not on COVID. He's been savaged in the British media. I quote the British media on it. And National Review, which is here in the United States, gave many examples of where Professor Lockdown gave grossly exaggerated predictions for other pandemics in the past. And of course, as we all know, hopefully, he also had to resign as a advisor because he himself violated his own lockdown rules, carrying on an affair with a married woman in the midst of the UK's lockdown.
Yeah, but look, the argument remains that even Ferguson himself would probably say that if they hadn't done the lockdown as he recommended, more people would have died. It's all very easy in retrospect to say, well, he exaggerated, but we may have seen more deaths, James, if we hadn't had some sort of way of stopping what they were trying to do, wasn't it, to flatten the curve, and they certainly managed to do that.
Well, you look at places that didn't have any lockdowns, such as South Dakota, which has had minimal effects from COVID. That's one of our states here in the United States. Look at Sweden. Their death numbers are going way down. They never locked down. My wife is originally from the country of Taiwan with a population of 24 million. As of last month, they had only 7 deaths. They didn't lock down. They didn't close churches. They didn't close schools. They didn't close businesses. But these countries are living proof that you don't need to lock down. The lockdowns are not the explanation for the deaths. The declining death rate is clearly due to the fact that herd immunity is developing and the virus is weakening.
Okay, so if what you say is true, why is it that so many countries around the world did decide to do this, Britain and America particularly?
Now you're getting into an area that I'm sure you know much about, and that has to do with the behind-the-scenes forces that are running the world, the central bankers. The fact that, even in my book on COVID-19, I quote Ferdinand Lundberg, who was one of America's most eminent financial journalists. He wrote a book back in 1937 called America's 60 Families, and he demonstrated in that book that America was run by an oligarchy operating behind the facade of democracy. And he wasn't a conspiracy theorist, he showed from the financial records that they owned America. Virtually, I'm not talking about small mom and pop businesses, but they own the major industries as well as owning the media. And this is 1937. We're talking 83 years ago, and they've only consolidated their control further since then. And I gave another example in the book. There's a fairly viral video on YouTube of the prime ministers of Australia and Canada delivering speeches in 2003 on the need for the war with Iraq, but the speeches are identical. These are just some examples of how politicians and media are centrally controlled. Therefore, given we have the illusion of democracy, but in fact, the world is under centralized control at this point. It's been going on for a long time.
What's the point then in pushing some kind of new world order agenda? It sounds from what you're saying as if it's already there.
Well, yeah, but it's not to its end point yet. I listened to a podcast that you gave, and you seem to recognize the Luciferian aspect of this, that these people are moving towards a totalitarian police state, which they are progressing towards, which they have not arrived at the end game of yet. China seems to be the technocratic prototype for this police state, where there's very little in the way of freedom of speech, and very little freedom of movement, unless you have a very high social credit score. They seem to be exemplifying the same process now in Australia, in New Zealand, where they cracked down in Melbourne over 7 deaths with people in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and cracked down in New Zealand over just 4 cases. And it's starting to spread over the rest of the world. You know, I'm sure you've seen the pictures of the videos of the woman in Australia who was being choked for not wearing a mask, and another woman who was handcuffed in her own home with her computers confiscated because she posted anti-lockdown remarks on Facebook. And we're seeing the George Orwell state coming to being. They just haven't reached the end point of absolute control that they are aiming for.
You're saying that this is forces behind the scenes. Can you pull away the veil a little bit, James, and give us a peek behind? Who is doing this and what's their object?
Well, you as a BBC reporter, did you not start looking into the Bilderberg Group, which is a group that's been meeting since the 1950s, since 1954 to be specific? You know, there's a great writer, Canadian writer from Canadian Intelligence. Back in the 1950s, he published 3 books on the behind the scenes world forces. The first, I really think, is one of the best books ever written on this. It was called Pawns in the Game. His next book, which is called Red Fog Over America, he'd already exposed the Bilderbergers, which most of us didn't learn about till the 1980s. But he had a complete listing of the Bilderberg attendees of 1957, and they included Henry Kissinger, who's still alive today, and the late David Rockefeller, who died a couple of years ago at age 101. So that's one look here in America. Of course, we have the Council on Foreign Relations. My 1988 book, The Shadows of Power, was an expose of the Council, how they had dominated the presidential cabinets, whether the president was a Democrat or a Republican, going back many, many decades, always operating with the goal of creating a world government. In fact, 47 of the delegates, American delegates, at the San Francisco convention that established the UN were members of the Council on Foreign Relations. These people are well organized. They have been aiming at world government for a long time. The first formal step was the League of Nations in 1919, following World War I, but it goes back in time even further than that.
Could say that this is a conspiracy going on here, James, but surely after World War I, there were millions of people that were actually thinking, well, we need to get some sort of form of international law going. And that's really what the League of Nations was about, to try and avoid another world war.
Yes, but there's already been demonstrated that that plan was in place before the war began. In fact, when the Lusitania went down, I can show you the intercepts from the American State Department, where they're already talking about how they're going to set up, after America gets involved with the war, an organization that will end war for all time, which, of course, the League failed at, as the UN has failed at. So this plan for the League of Nations was in place before the war began. Let's stress that. It goes back before the World War I.
Well, what about the post-World War II world? You mentioned the Bilderbergers, but quite clearly there are groups, particularly in the West, which seem to marry elitist interests, that is to say royalty, the aristocracy, banking, oil, and particularly the mass media. So can you just give us an idea of how you think these people are working behind the scenes? And as I said before, what's their ultimate goal?
Well, their ultimate goal certainly is Luciferian. This is not something I mentioned in my book, COVID-19 Red Pill, but I think it's something you have an awareness of. You know, in the Bible, the book of Revelation talks about an era when a satanic figure called the Antichrist will rule the world. Now, the Bible also says in the book of Revelation that he will not allow anyone to buy or sell unless they have what they call the mark of the beast. And as we look at it now, we see that, and I quote this in my new book, COVID-19 Red Pilled, Rice University here in the United States is already developing what they call a digital tattoo to be injected with vaccinations, which will be read by a smartphone. So you'll have a mark on you to indicate whether or not you have been injected with the latest approved vaccine. Now, right now here in America, there's many places you can't even go into a grocery store and shop without a mask. It's pretty obvious that they're going to take this up to the next step once the vaccines are approved, that you can't go and shop unless you have this mark saying that you've been vaccinated. That's awfully close to the mark of the beast, which would not allow you to buy or sell without the approval of the government authorities. I also want to point out that the book of Revelation says that the Antichrist will rule over every tribe and nation. In other words, he will govern the world. Well, governing the world, isn't that world government? Isn't that with the UN and the League of Nations, and which the EU incrementally on a regional basis have been leading us toward? It's pretty obvious when you start to look at the full picture.
Well, I would suggest to you that actually the UN isn't a world government. What it is, it's a place for governments around the world to meet, and sometimes they agree, sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. They'll have votes and things like that. But it is also a place where completely sovereign governments will meet. It's not itself a world government.
They've talked about this in Foreign Affairs, the Journal of the Council of Foreign Relations, that you cannot get to world government in one quick step. You have to build it incrementally through organizations, you know, World Health Organization, the Kyoto Protocols. You've got Gordon Brown recently quoted during the COVID crisis saying we need a form of global governance to handle the COVID crisis. So they're not going to do this overnight, but you've got the World Economic Forum talking about how they're going to have a forum in January of 2021 for what they're calling an economic reset. So, no, it's not all a sweeping change towards world government, but it's certainly being built piece by piece. And in fact, back at the Council of Foreign Relations in 1930, one of their leaders gave a speech in which he described the building of world government as he compared it to the building of the new headquarters of the Council of Foreign Relations. He said, you have to do it brick by brick, and that's how they're doing it.
I do think it's quite brave of you to almost do a bit of crystal ball gazing and say, you know, with your book talking about the agenda to come, you've talked there about the Bible and the mark of the beast. I wonder, are there any other things that you think that there are pointers to in the Bible that also may be part of this COVID agenda? Because there's no doubt about it, there's an enormous stripping of basic civil liberties and funneling of power towards the center in the West, which is almost unprecedented.
Well, as far as clues in the Bible, I think the Revelation is the main one. But if you look back to the pre-flood era, which is described in Genesis chapter 6, it talks about the giants of the earth, and it talks about the union between the sons of God, a reference to angels, and the sons of men. And the giants, which there is, by the way, physical evidence for, there's books written about this. I would check out L.A. Marzulli, who reproduces many newspaper reports from the 19th century and the discovery of the bones of giants in graves, which were then destroyed by our Smithsonian Institution. But what happened before the flood, and this is something I write about the flood in my book, 1999 book, Tornado in a Junkyard. I'm talking about Darwinism principally, but I talk about the reality of the flood. You have 200 cultures which had a legend of the flood. Even Plato spoke of it, but also 75% of the Earth's rock is sedimentary. In other words, chiefly deposited by water. And we have these hundreds of billions of fossils in the earth, and yet fossils, by and large, are not being created today. Why? Because you have to be rapidly covered by sediment. There's a lot of physical evidence for the flood, but there's also biblical evidence that the reason the flood came about was not simply that we have an angry God, but because the fallen angels, not only were they transhumanizing men, they're transhumanizing species. And I cover this in my online post at my website, jamesperloff.com. It's called Making Sense of the Supernatural, which is also a chapter in my book, 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw.
Well, what do you mean by transhumanizing?
Changing the DNA, altering the DNA. In fact, let me see if I can quickly find the references. You know, if you look at the book of Enoch, which is quoted in the Bible, or the book of Jubilees, or the book of Jasher, which are mentioned in the Bible, although not specifically quoted, you can find references to these. And
So this is what's generally called pseudepigrapha or apocrypha. These are books which were floating around, but the early Christian church, the Council of Nicaea and people like this decided weren't strong enough, at least as justifiable, to put in the whole canon of the Bible. What's in some of these? I mean, I think that's, you know, there's definitely potentially something interesting stuff in there. If you look at what happened in the Reformation, the Protestants, Luther and his chums, actually got rid of a fantastic amount of brilliant material, including things like the Book of Ecclesiasticus, the end of the Book of Daniel, from the Bible. So if you pick up a Protestant Bible, there's a whole load of the best stuff missing. So I'm certainly, you know, up for entertaining the idea that some of these Book of Jasher, Jubilees, Enoch may have something interesting in there. So run it past us, James.
All right, so I'm going to quote from the Book of Jubilees. It's talking about pre-flood. It says, quote, "All flesh corrupted its way, alike men and cattle and beasts and birds and everything that walketh on the earth, all of them corrupted their ways and their orders." And also to quote from the Book of Jasher, chapter 4, verse 18, it says, "The sons of men in those days took from the cattle of the earth, the beasts of the field, and the fowls of the air, and taught the mixture of animals of one species with the other in order to therewith provoke the Lord. And God saw that the whole earth was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted its ways upon the earth, all men and all animals," end quote. So what I'm saying is that when they talk about these DNA, mRNA vaccines, which have been developed by companies like Inovio and Moderna, which is not too far from where I live, they're talking about changing your DNA. We've already seen this before. We've seen plenty of reports in the mainstream media about inserting human genes into animals. I mean, CNN had a report on glow-in-the-dark cats, you know, where they inserted genes from, I think it was from, fireflies, I believe it was, into cats to make them glow. And so we're seeing this as well. Transgenderism, I think, was a step towards transhumanism. And I think that we're seeing the same Luciferian forces at play, because frankly, I don't think men are intelligent enough to do changes we're seeing in our culture from behind the scenes. I think there's a higher intelligence at work, and I don't mean God's intelligence. I mean some of these same fallen beings, which, you know, in the movies they would call aliens, but we recognize as fallen beings, okay, fallen angels.
For most people, Lucifer is not something that we come across every day. We realize that there is some guy called Satan who's the devil, effectively. So what's the difference between Lucifer and Satan? Are they interchangeable terms?
Well, I think a lot of people do use them interchangeably. I think that Lucifer has been used more as Satan putting on his bright side, you know, like the in Star Wars, they talk about the dark side and of the force and the lighter side. And Satan can certainly disguise himself as an angel of light. The Bible talks about that. And I think that might be the Lucifer side, but the Satan side would be when he reveals his most ruthless nature.
Okay, and what about more of your agendas to come? Because I think it's always interesting looking at when something like this happens, to ask around to find out, and certainly you seem to have put a lot of work into this, to suggest which ways people are going, not necessarily in a prophetic fashion, but also basically it's educated guesswork. You know, for journalists like you and I who have been working for many years, we've seen trends taking place, and it could be that COVID-19 is just one of those trends which fits into a wider pattern. So what else do you think's to come, James?
Part four of my book is called The Deep State's Endgame, and deep state being one of the words used for this oligarchy. But I have a chapter on the population reduction, a full chapter on Bill Gates and all the stuff he's up to. I have a chapter on the plan for global vaccination. I have one called 8 Reasons Why We Don't Need a COVID Vaccine. I have one chapter just on hydroxychloroquine, because so much has been done to try and stop use of hydroxychloroquine, which threatens the need for a global vaccine. I also have a chapter on the plan for a global digital ID. We see Microsoft allied, for example, with the Global 2020 Alliance to establish a universal global ID, and also a cashless society. The journal Euromoney recently had an article where they're saying that COVID was making cash unnecessary in many countries, because after all, you know, money could have the COVID germs on it. So why do we need to have cash in the first place? But that has also been integrated right now in West Africa, where you see the Gavi Alliance, the Bill Gates Vaccine Alliance, is working with MasterCard and AI company called Trust Stamp, so that people will have a digital record, not only of their vaccination record, but their financial record. And that really brings, again, to the fore the whole idea of a mark of the beast, where you can't buy or sell unless you've got the mark. And in that section, you also have a chapter on contact tracing and the surveillance state.
Well, one word you mentioned there, Bill Gates. What do you think his role is? Because he comes across as, quite an affable, benevolent chap, even though, of course, he's one of the richest men in the world. What's Bill Gates' role in all of this?
Well, he seems to be the chief spokesman for what the agenda should be. He appears throughout the mainstream media, especially here in America. And he's been involved with a lot of bad things. One thing I noticed about Bill Gates is that he doesn't like anything natural. And quoting the mainstream media, I point out that he's got his Gates Foundation has got 5.3 million shares of Crown Castle, which is a 5G infrastructure builder. He's invested in half a million shares of Monsanto, now owned, by Bayer, but they're the makers of glyphosate, which is very carcinogenic, as well as GMOs. And, you're talking about transhumanism, the transspeciesism, GMOs are changing the way seeds are made. And also he's producing lab-grown meat to replace the meat that we eat. He's investing in artificial breast milk for babies. And he's even got a plan, this is in the British press, to block the sun with, reduce the sunlight with millions of tons of dust being spread in the atmosphere. So he doesn't like anything natural, whether it's in nature or the human body or food. He hates it. And yet he's the one, he's stated that he's invested in 7 COVID vaccine factories. One of them, of course, is the one I mentioned, Moderna, which is making this mRNA, this transhumanizing vaccine. And he is at the forefront of this drive to change the world and bring about this cashless digital ID mandatory global vaccine state.
He's obviously a very pro-vaccine guy, but you say you've got a chapter in your book all about, was it 8 reasons not to have a vaccine? It'd be very interesting to hear. Can you just run through those? Because for most people, they think that if there's a pandemic around, a vaccine is the obvious thing to do, but you don't agree. So why don't you agree?
Okay, well, all right, the 8 reasons. First of all, Stanford University did a study that showed that the maximum death rate from COVID is 0.2% would be 99.8% survival rate. But the CDC back in May said the death rate from COVID is only 0.26%, which means you've got a survival rate of 99.74% without a vaccine. So why should we have a mandatory vaccine if it we can survive so well without it? Plus the fact that the coronavirus keeps mutating. I quote an Italian nanopathologist named Stefano Mannari. He says if he proposed a coronavirus vaccine as a student, he'd been kicked out of class because the coronavirus keeps mutating. That's why we never get immune to the common cold, and that's why we've never had a vaccine for the common cold. It keeps mutating. So if you do make a coronavirus vaccine, you're going to need a new one every few months because it keeps mutating. But reason number 3, there are a number of epidemiologists, including some I quote from Oxford, that say that the coronavirus is basically COVID-19, as we know it, is disappearing or disappeared already. Number 4, we already touched on the fact that countries like Sweden and Taiwan have flattened the curve without a vaccine. Also, number 5, I quote Dr. Richard Bartlett of Odessa, Texas, who's had 100% success treating COVID with inhalers or nebulizers. Number 6, Northwestern University in the United States has shown there's a significant correlation with COVID death and vitamin D deficiency. In other words, if you're not vitamin D deficient, you're very unlikely to die from it. Number 7, we've already gotten into, but the very fact that these DNA, mRNA vaccines are changing your DNA, this has never been done before. We've never had these before. They're entirely experimental. Why would you want to mess with your DNA when we have a 99.74% survival rate?
Because they're not experimental. Yeah. They're doing proper trials on them first before releasing them to the public.
Well, Dr. Kerry Madej, who I quote in my book, would disagree with that. She says that you should be doing animal trials first. That's the standard process. But they're going straight to humans, and they're having a lot of failures, by the way, a lot of people having severe reactions from these. And since the coronavirus appears to be disappearing and we have such a high survival rate, why would you want to, as the White House puts it, bring about a vaccine at warp speed? That's how they've been putting it. The other thing is that when they tried to develop a SARS vaccine, and SARS is according to the Lancet, is 79% genetically similar to COVID. They got a terrible reaction in the animals. They had a very robust antibody reaction, but when they encountered the real virus, the actual virus, they went into cytokine storm, which is what makes COVID so deadly for a few people. Cytokine storm is an autoimmune reaction in the lungs. So again, these are 8 reasons. That's not even including hydroxychloroquine, which I devoted an entire chapter to. But those are some of the reasons we certainly don't need a COVID vaccine.
You've hinted here, and certainly in your stuff about the Bible, etc., intelligent design. And you know, we're looking at people like Gates, basically, and the transhumanists saying that human beings can be genetically engineered to make them better. You're arguing, and I think I would argue too, that actually we're created in a rather fine fashion anyway. And a lot of this tinkering is likely to lead to actually worse outcomes. For example, through genetically engineered crops, we've seen the Terminator technology coming in, so that every person who's growing food has to go to some crop company, one of the massive ones, I imagine, in order to get the seeds. They cannot grow their own seeds because everything that starts to grow is then infertile. So there is definitely a dark side to this genetically engineered way of doing things. I wonder, though, if for someone coming at this who hasn't really had much of a discussion, even at school sometimes, about the idea of intelligent design, what would you point to say, well, actually, here is some real evidence that points to intelligent design that you probably haven't ever been exposed to in school?
We are marvelously designed. We have tremendous immune systems. And I wrote a book, and again, 1998, called Tornado in a Junkyard, which so many things come out of Britain, whether it's Marx or the Beatles or Darwin. But, you know, Darwin's work was actually a house of cards. Certainly there's such a thing as natural selection, but you won't get one type of animal macro evolving into another type. That's all speculation on Darwin's part. You certainly, God gave us smart genes, which enable us to adapt to our environment. So a mother can, if she has a premature baby, her milk will adapt to that situation and give the baby the right enzymes and other nutrients it needs. And you know, if we have an infection, our body produces more white blood cells. We can adapt to a situation, but we don't adapt from fish to people. That was Darwin's basic mistake, was saying that we make these gigantic leaps of evolution, for which he had no evidence for. But yes, we are marvelously designed, created in God's image as human beings. And again, this is going back to what we said before. This is not something to go into my book, COVID-19 Red Pill, because it's just I'm not trying to hit people with things that are a little too spiritual. I'm just trying to stick with the facts and the quotes from the scientists. There is definitely a transhumanistic aspect to this that we want to stay away from. We want to stay away from the types of things that we've seen occurred in the past.
Okay, the other thing which I think many people will recognize, James, 100%, is this push towards a cashless society. Why should we be concerned about that, though? Because it's a lot more convenient to wave a little credit card or your hand, a microchip in your hand, in order to pay for something, than it is to, you know, go through cash and withdraw it from the bank. It means, it's actually a hell of a lot more convenient.
Well, the problem is that it's very easy to take away from you. You know, we went from here in America, we had gold and silver coins. And then in 1933, President Franklin D. Roosevelt, at the behest of the bankers, did away with that. He forced everyone to turn in their gold and silver. And then lo and behold, he about doubled the price of gold after everyone had turned it in, which is very pleasing that the bankers had got hold of it. Some people say that Fort Knox is empty of gold. And I've even talked to soldiers at Garda who say that that's privately known. But we went from gold and silver to paper money, and then we went to digital currency. The problem with digital currency is when your entire life's work is represented by nothing but a few digits in an online bank, it's very easy for some government bureaucrat to just erase that. We see that how in, I'll give you an example. I was on a podcast. Well, I take it back. I was talking to a podcast host over dinner the other night, and he told me about a friend of his who was in China who was caught jaywalking. This is quite recent. And the way he was caught jaywalking was through facial recognition. And then the penalty for jaywalking was digitally removed from his account. Now, with the totalitarian governments, you can see how they could use this system to bankrupt you overnight. If your wealth is represented by not by real money, but by just this cashless system, they could take it away from you just like that. You know, like in China, where the social credit scores, you know, if you have a good social credit score, you're a good boy or girl, you obey the government, you'll be able to travel, you'll be able to do things, you'll be able to shop. But if you're not, they'll take that away. So the risk, in spite of there's always going to be, you know, there's convenience. To get a mouse into a trap, you've got to put cheese there. And so the cheese is the convenience. But the fact of the matter is if you make everything cashless, the government, these governments, which as we can see the evidence that they're turning increasingly police state-like, Orwellian and totalitarian, they can take away your wealth with a few keystrokes. And that is something we certainly don't want.
Various people have talked about this as an unprecedented move, James, against the public to strip civil liberties and effectively a kind of emperor's new clothes virus, which isn't actually killing hardly anybody anymore. We're talking right in September 2020, and yet there's still these very strict measures, almost as if we're stuck on some past reality. And although it's all gone, the pandemic is effectively over. Right. Some people that seem to like the measures and have kept them going. What about this idea that this is the beginning of the end? Because it does seem a very unprecedented move for governments to basically be marshalling around their own domestic population, even though there's no effective need for it. There's no war going on or whatever. It seems that this is doing that to populations. Is there any light at the end of the tunnel here? Because it's, you know, for many people, they're looking at this thinking this is extremely unprecedented and our civil liberties may be gone forever. So can you say anything to give us the will to carry on? Because sometimes it doesn't seem as if it seems that almost we're being gaslighted by our own governments, basically being told that behaving rationally is even in some situations could be a criminal offence now.
Yes, actually, the last chapter of my book, I have 27 chapters in it, is called Hope and Encouragement. And I start out by saying that the Bible doesn't end with the Antichrist, it ends with Christ. And I think that is our ultimate light at the end of the tunnel. But I do also in that chapter take encouragement from the awakening that's taking place. I mean, this was too late to get into my book, but they say 2 million people were demonstrated in Germany. And you had big demonstrations there in England. There were in Ireland and other places. I quote religious leaders, Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox, even including Muslim as well, speaking out against a global vaccine. I quote doctors, police officers. I mentioned some of the lawsuits that are going against some of the American governors taking unconstitutional authority. I quote Sarah Cuneo, the Italian member of parliament, saying that Bill Gates should be brought before the International Court of Justice. I've built Ben Garrison is a famous American cartoonist. He's got a cartoon called COVID 1984 with Bill Gates presiding over a 1984 world. He gave me permission to reprint that in my book. I quote Terrence K. Williams, black American comedians get 800,000 followers on Twitter. He says he'd rather have fried chicken grease shot up his arm than a Bill Gates vaccine. I quote Murat Seyfan, the former world tennis champion, who talks about what's going on with COVID, this whole scheme. So I point to the awakening, and I give people many resources they can use to follow up on this. So I believe there's hope in the human response, in the awakening, the fact that people are being red-pilled to this. But I do believe our ultimate hope is in God. It was before the flood. I believe it is after.
So what's the best way for people to get hold of copies of your book, James?
You can get it on Amazon. Again, it's COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, Red Pill, that actually ranked number 254 of all books on Amazon 2 days after publication, so it got off to a good start. And but in addition to Amazon, I'm always concerned about, you know, the way the establishment has been censoring books, YouTube videos, et cetera, critical of the lockdown. So I'm actually having a separate printing done by a separate printer unrelated to Amazon. And I'm working with secondary sellers. And people can keep track of my website, where I'll be updating where those secondary sellers would be. But right now, the quickest way to get it is actually Amazon. You can get it, if you got, especially if you've got a Prime account, you can get it pretty quick from, you know, most places in the world that have Amazon.
Okay, so Jeff Bezos, even though he's criticizing your book, I imagine he's getting quite happy with all these extra sales.
Well, I don't think he cares about the sales too much. He makes enough money. He doesn't need my book for that.
Okay, James, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's been a delight talking to you. Unless you played the devil's advocate sometime, but I think that's a mark of a good journalist.